Good morning, everyone. I hope you had an excellent day yesterday and enjoyed all of the war games that you were playing. This morning, we are continuing in our endeavour to bring wargaming forward, to ride the top of the sine wave, and to stop apologising for it. So this morning, we're talking about best practice in wargaming. I'm Amanda Coleman. I spent 25 years in the MOD before breaking out into private industry, into kinetic. And a lot of that time was spent playing, developing, generating, and organising war games. This morning, I have the pleasure of chairing four speakers who are going to give some quick presentations, and then we're going to have some time for questions. So I have the pleasure to introduce David England from Nightworks, Jeremy Smith from Cranfield, Rex Brinnan from McGill, and Captain Ed Farron from Sandhurst.
No, Field Army.
Field Army, there we go. Wasn't on my piece of paper. So, without further ado, can I welcome David to the stage? Thank you.
Good morning. Those who don't know me, David England. I'm the project lead within the Nightworks Partnership to deliver combat experimentation, part of which within that plan we use wargaming. So I'm not a wargaming SME as such, it's not an apology, it's a statement of fact. I'm not a wargamer, but I use wargaming as part of an integrated plan. Thank you. Is that pointer on there as well? That's what I'm going to cover very quickly in about 15 minutes. The example I'm going to use is a light battle group experiment, which is a major experiment Army Headquarters did last year. Some of you who were here last year would have heard, I think, Graham and Major Jan Searle talk about the planning for that. Hopefully that sparks a few things in your brain, in the back of it somewhere, in the memory part. We've executed it, we've delivered it, so it's now sort of time to go, well, did it work? And I'm just going to cover a bit of that and see if there's any ways in which we could improve force development experimentation. I'm going to rattle through, to a certain extent, some initial slides. Some of them are a bit complicated. I'll just pull out the key things to sort of take away from them. First busy slide. That is Army force development on one page, if you like. And the things to sort of home in on are the sort of four red boxes, the sort of time frames, the epochs that they look at the issues. The current force on the left, obviously that's the field army as we have today that's ready. That's the order of battle. Over on the right-hand side, which is the conceptual force. Essentially, the space that I'm working in the combat directorate in Army Headquarters works in, is with experimentation, what we do is baseline the current force. So everything we do is, how are we achieving what we achieve? Can we achieve what we want to achieve now? And then forecasting out into the future, how's that going to stand the test of time and the development of threats and different threats to the UK and the ground force in general? That then informs the management almost of the funded force, because a lot of that funding is then committed and what we're going to buy. But it does help with the management, but it certainly informs about what's coming next in the future force. And of course, the important thing that at the bottom there, RD&A and E, that experimentation is just a part of the force development effort. And there's an awful lot of you, and a lot of you involved in the research area as well. That's not my slide, and some of you have seen this before. It's basically the experiment design, if you like, on one page. And what we're trying to achieve with force development experimentation is that sort of piece of cake in the middle, that orange piece of cake, which is what I call the sweet spot. And that's essentially the space we need to be operating in. And where you put wargaming, or where you put virtual or constructive modelling in there, you can argue that all day. It's probably roundabout right. It obviously depends on lots of things. It's roundabout right. The burden of proof arrow, clearly the further to the right you go with that and go up, the levels of evidence required push you into having to do certain activities. Obviously, one of the X or Ys on there could also be cost. And the more you go up there, the more expensive it is. Wargaming is a vital part of experimentation in force development. Not because it's a relatively inexpensive way of gaining insight, but it involves the user. It involves the frontline commands. It involves the people that are going to make the decisions. And it takes them on a journey. And it's a really important activity that we use it for. So the example, as I say, some of you may have, will be familiar to you. That was the question we were asked. It's about light battle groups, and it's about operating in major combat operations, war fighting, as part of an armoured infantry brigade. Those were the objectives, so it's sort of validating CONEMPS, the concept that underpins it. The bottom one is about gaining insights, observations to help decision-making within Army headquarters. Interestingly, though, is the middle one, which is something new to the experimentation, and that's about force generation. That's helping units convert to role, and it's helping them get their initial operating capability. This is a new capability, light mech. And experimentation, therefore, was used as part of the concept development and training of that unit. It's sort of a free good, if you like. Again, quite busy slide. Basically, it reads left to right. Start off with the estimate of how we approach the experiment. Lots of activity there. What I've highlighted, the small highlighted area there, is the unit-level war games. There was an element of training the unit how to war game in that. And then the main war game towards the end of the experiment that took place in February. So what that really looked like, the unit level war games, there was five unit war games. Yes, we got to go to Morocco, fantastic, Germany, UK, all the rest of it. The important thing is they were converting to their role. They were in a place where this was new capability. This is equipment bought from campaigning in Iraq and Afghanistan that were brought into as core capabilities. But we're now starting to use them in a war-fighting, conventional war-fighting setting. So there were five different units we war-gamed with. The tactical actions on the bottom there is what the war game tried to expose and use. And then on the right-hand side, you've got the main war game that took place in February, where we brought three of those units to Andover, and we battle-grouped them and then fought them as three separate battle-groups. Using a very complex core level intervention operation based on those, you know, the sort of date scenario in the Caucasus. That's how it was designed. I'm not going to take any credit for it whatsoever. Graham was the guy who designed this, and unexpectedly, I'm not going to go through them. That was, if you like, the methodology behind it. And, of course, that's essentially out of the best practice guide of how to design a war game. So there's no surprises there. The message is we followed it, we used it, and that's exactly the process we used. And it worked. Our timeline. Well, our timeline was relatively extended in experimentation terms. In that at least 2 months out, Graham and I sat down in a pub in Devizes to start this thing off. How are we going to do this thing? This is the question. And over a sort of a two-month period, we scoped it. He largely designed it, brought together some SMEs outside of the sort of core team, a part of the Nightworks partnership. And we did a test X1, which was really sort of rough and ready. Are we on the right lines here in terms of its design? And then importantly, test X2, which was a proper dress rehearsal and to make sure that it was fit for purpose before we delivered it. 14 days out, we sent the unit all the operational staff work, and it was proper operational staff work with sync matrices, decision support overlays, etc. The day before, we turned up at the unit. The ops officer and intelligence officer of that unit would give a scenario and ground brief to essentially the chain of command of the battle group. And then day one, they did a receipt of orders briefs, as they would do on operations. The only difference now was the estimate. Instead of spending maybe 7 or 8 hours over it, they had all day. It was their time to really dig into the plan, explore different courses of action. Some of them, yes, used wargaming, course of action wargaming. And we sat in on that because clearly for us, it was really good insights in terms of the factors that would drive them down certain course of action for that capability. Day two was the big day. That was the war game day. That was hand over to Graham and run the show. And again, we spent all day over it. And typically, we did about four turns, which I'll come on to a bit more detail in the next few slides. During those turns, we identified those areas that were really important, but there wasn't time to dig into them. And we called those deep dives. And the next day, we took those deep dives, we took them as vignettes, if you like, and we then drilled into it in more detail with the SMEs that were there, or maybe even brought in an SME to drill into that in more detail to gain the insight that was required for the evidence that was required. What isn't on that slide is then the analysis, which clearly takes some time afterwards. That's what it looked like. No surprises, again, to most people in this room. You know, the blue players were the full chain of command, but it was combined arms. They had their gunner, they had their engineer, and we had the players there. And I'll come on to the importance of the chain of command buying into this and making sure they put their weight behind it and the right people turn up on the day. I would also bring out, you know, the bottom layer there. That was the delivery team. That was the Night Works delivery team that drew on experts in various areas, some of which are here today, to help deliver this. And the importance of having those people who know their business. They know what's required out of that activity. On the right-hand side, you've got the red. And typically, in course of action wargaming, the IO plays red. We found on the first one we did that it wasn't working. He's too close to his CO. He's in the reporting chain. He's not that adversarial, to be honest. He plays at being adversarial. What we did do is bring in the Canadian exchange officer in Army headquarters, who's a colonel, who was outstanding, absolutely brilliant. He had no issues whatsoever of challenging the commander and the blue plan. And he hit the importance of that role I cannot overstate. It worked very well, and it's something absolutely we need to take forward. If you want to test your plan, have someone that's prepared to test it. The other one is top left, and that's important as well, because the customer, if you like, the capability owner, who was mentioned yesterday about taking people on a journey, this is how you take them on a journey. They witness it, they experience all the issues the unit are having to face to fight this battle. And they start to take ownership of the problem, ownership of the insight, and when it comes to reporting at the end of the experiment, they've already got it. The report is simply putting, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's and producing the bit of paper you have to produce, but they already have it in their Swede. That's what the turn looks like. Again, there'll be no surprises there whatsoever to most people in this room. That was the mechanism we used. The only thing I'll say about it is there was a plan and we execute the plan, but at times you have to be ruthless. You have to say, stop, we're moving on to the next thing, or that's outside the boundary of this, park it, we'll look at it some other time, move on. And you do have to be quite ruthless, and Graham, nice bloke as he is, can be quite ruthless, which is good. The other thing I'd point out about that is... the opportunity, you do have to be ruthless, but you also have to give them the opportunity to discuss. The actual individual outcomes of kinetic activity, of a subunit against something else, or a platoon against something else, that, you know, whether it's 2 casualties or 10 casualties, frankly doesn't matter that much in FD experimentation. It's the consequence management, and is that plan robust enough to take the on a good day or on a bad day? It's the discussion is everything. But I'll come on to a bit about that in a minute. So did it work? Well, of course it worked, because we got Graham in to help us do it. But why did it work? Well, I think there's a, you know, you can read the list there. I'll just pull out a few things from my perspective why it worked, and that's planning. Planning is everything. Actually getting this thing designed for the purpose that's required to make sure you get the right output is absolutely critical. I think having SMEs, not just SMEs within the players themselves, to make sure that if you're talking about joint fires, you've got someone who understands joint fires there, but also SMEs in terms of executing it and delivering it in terms of people, like you guys, I guess, in the room, who understand wargaming and the design of specific wargames to actually pull out those things you're trying to do. Chain of command. You absolutely have to have them on side. Why did we have them on side this time? Several reasons. They had a vested interest because Army Headquarters was looking at that unit and it was converting. That focuses the mind, I guess, in some ways. Training. The benefit to this, to the units, was absolutely, you know, that they wanted more of it. And that every CO wrote to Army Headquarters saying, how can we get more of this? Which is fantastic. It's a genuine professional development, a bonus with this activity, and of course all units are crying out for opportunities to train because it's few and far between these days. The final thing that I'll pull out from this slide is that it was professionally rewarding, but it was fun. They all enjoyed it. It wasn't, you know, at the end of it going, oh my God, that was a hard 3 days. They genuinely enjoyed it, and those people there can testify to that. It was good fun. And that always helps. So how can we develop this? It worked, it was great, but couldn't we improve it? Well, yes, I think we can. And the way we can improve it, particularly in force development, is keeping them honest. You know, the super tank that takes out everything at 4Ks is great, but it doesn't actually exist. The fact that, you know, a company can pin down the enemy position to allow you to manoeuvre is all well and good, but if you can't see them because of line of sight issues and all the rest of it, and night and fog and all those frictions of war. So keeping them honest. And of course, we do provide them maps, we do provide them air photos, ground analysis is obviously part of it, demographic mapping, whatever it happens to be. But I think we can do better. And this year, we did a similar process with the scout experiment that's still ongoing at the moment, and we start to use terrain mapping that starts to bring out and get them to use ground. Part of, you know, the art of war is using the ground to your advantage and putting them in a place where you can beat the enemy, but the enemy's at a disadvantage. It's how you manipulate the ground and use the ground, so maneuver. And if you start to bring out, rather than a plain map, you have to interpret, if you can start to bring out the terrain, it does help visualise the whole thing. And of course, another way of visualising is using things like the virtual rock drill, which I know has been looked at Sandhurst and Brecon in the tactics schools there, in terms of fly-throughs and getting them to visualise what they're actually talking about and keeping them honest. I think toots have a massive part to play in this. I know Sandhurst do toots part of their thing. We accidentally did a toots in February, if I can say that, because the unit wanted to do it. I did it with them, and it was awesome. And I will do it again, but this time I'll plan it. Plausible outcomes. I think we're okay in terms of our modelling and things, down to sort of subunit level. When you start to get individual troops or individual platforms starting to engage things, you know, OPs and things like that, it's all a bit, you know, iffy, grey area. This year we start to develop sort of lookup tables where if you understand the detect range, the recognised range, you can then start looking at probability of hit and start to give some maths behind some of the outcomes to make them more credible, more plausible, if you like. And I think there's more work to be done in that. I think some of the OA models that we use need updating. A lot of the stuff that's coming in now or is already in, 40mm turrets, firing on the move, is a whole different ballgame for the British Army, and we don't have the models in wargaming to support that kind of capability, and we need to. Red planning, I've already covered it. Make it adversarial, bring someone in who's not part of the chain command and who's a credible red commander, and give him time to plan as well so he's not on the back foot from turn one. And I've mentioned toots. In summary, prepare, it works. The training value is awesome. People like to do it. It's a good news story. We can develop it a bit better, and we're doing more of it. That's me.